Hey everybody, Tyler here, the host of the Carbonite Crew podcast. Thank you guys for listening. I just want to say happy Star Wars Podcast Day 2022. This is the second annual podcast day in recognition of all the Star Wars podcasts that are out there. There are so many. Can't even begin to name all of them. There's so many good shows, so many great hosts, and this would not be possible without all of you listeners out there supporting all of these wonderful shows and all of these wonderful people. Star Wars has brought so many people together, and it is amazing, the community. There's so much positivity, so much love, and for that, I will always be grateful. I am grateful for everyone that listens to this show. I cannot express how thankful I am for you guys. Without you guys, I would just be sitting here talking to myself every week, and that just doesn't sound as fun. So thank you guys again for listening. If you haven't, go check out all the other Star Wars podcasts that are out there. There's so many great shows, like I said before, so many wonderful hosts, and this is for them. This is for you guys. This is just for, you know, Star Wars and podcasts and everybody involved. I want to thank Daniel for getting this set up for all of the Star Wars podcasts that are out there, setting this up, making this a thing. Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of it this year, and I cannot wait for the future. There are so many good shows. Go support other Star Wars podcasts, the Star Wars podcast hosts that are out there. And as much as it is for them and for the shows, this is just as much about you guys, the listeners. So this week, this is a special episode just for this. I sat down with one of my good friends, Fez. He's been a longtime supporter of the show. We talk about the Bad Batch. We talk about his feelings on The Last Jedi, some of the positive impact Star Wars has had on, you know, just the world and his life in general. And we have I feel like we have a great conversation here. I really enjoyed myself. So without further ado, guys, here is the special episode for you. Happy Star Wars Podcast Day 2022. Make sure to let us know you are listening using the hashtag Star Wars Podcast Day 2022. And until next time, may the Force be with you guys. Here it is.
Shut up and sit down.
Do not self-destruct.
We decided to come and rescue you.
Good job.
Before the dark times,
I'll show you the dark side.
This is where the fun begins.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into the Carbonite Crew podcast. I am your host, Tyler Carden, and as always, I'm here to have a good time. I'm here to talk some Star Wars, and that is what we're going to do. And today, we are joined by one of my good friends, none other than one of the longtime supporters of the show. And I became friends with him really through the love of Star Wars and pop culture and everything, all of the above. So welcome in today, our guest, Fez. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I think all the way back to when you first told me you were going to start the podcast, I was like, dude, sick, man. Can I talk about how much I hate The Last Jedi? Did you start before or after The Last Jedi?
When did that come out? 2017. I started before that.
Okay, because I was trying to remember that. I remember what a drastic shift in emotion, at least for me. I know most people share the same sentiment. Like, one of the most anticipated Star Wars films of all time, you know, after the most recent one, of course. Mm-hmm. and then what a dumpster fire. It's just, I remember watching it and I just was like in awe of like what the F is this movie? Like, it just, like, I know everyone like, oh, well, they're trying to subvert expectations, like all this other stuff. And I said, look, like, I want to go see a Star Wars movie. I want to see some Star Wars stuff. I don't need, yep, you know, Shakespeare. I don't need theater. So, but anyways, yeah, I remember, you know, we had nice long in-depth conversations about stuff like that. And I'm glad you got the podcast off the ground. And I mean, honestly, because of the podcast, I watched Rebels when Disney Plus came out. So, hey, there you go. There's a testimony.
I walk away with one good thing from the show,
yeah,
it is that. That's my favorite animated series. So,
And I know you're a big Chopper guy. So how stoked were you when you saw Chopper in the Bad Batch?
Dude, I literally would catch myself smiling. I'm like, I'm just smiling at this cartoon right now.
So I'm pretty sure I can finally say like 100%, like Chopper's probably my favorite droid.
Yeah.
And like, he's just kind of an a-hole. And
yeah.
And Dave Filoni voices him, so even better.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Dave Filoni did all the voices for him. All the lines. And Chopper actually did have lines.
Yeah, I did know that.
In the scripts.
That's what Disney did with Groot. Like, they actually, even though he says, "I am Groot," in like parentheses, it's like, you know, it says this, or like, this is the emotion that he's feeling. I was like, that's too much work, but worth it. Like, just knowing that random trivia. But
dude, Disney and Marvel and Lucasfilm, they do too much for us. And even if it's not the best outcome, they still do a lot of work.
You and I were having that conversation, like one of my favorite things about the Bad Batch and is like, I feel like they got it right. Like, I think the Mandalorian, the look and the feel of the Mandalorian, just, you know, being that, I don't want to say old school, but they really tried hard on using real stuff, like real props and costumes, you know, like they used to, like in the original films, you know. And I know Jurassic World did that too. Like, I think that's what made Jurassic World so good, was they went back to using animatronics in certain scenes, you know, not relying so heavy on CGI, which I think is great for the film industry in general now, because a lot of studios are starting to mix the two. Because I feel like when CGI, like after The Matrix and Star Wars Episode One, everyone just got a CGI boner and they're like, let's run with it. But I really think, you know, feel like they got things right. Like, Rogue One is by far one of my favorite Star Wars films now, mostly because I'm a huge Darth Vader fan.
Mm-hmm.
I told people over and over, that hallway scene at the end of Rogue One, I would have paid. I don't want to admit how much I would have paid to go see that film. But like, just that scene alone, like, as someone who's a huge fan of Darth Vader, and then like in The Mandalorian this last season, like my best friend's huge Boba Fett guy, we go at it, you know, who would win, Boba Fett or Darth Vader? But seeing Boba Fett go ham in The Mandalorian, dude, like, it's just like, it's like, man, like, say what you want about fan service, I get it, but like, there's, I think a lot of these studios, a lot of these big companies, whether they're sports teams or film or whatever, I do think it makes me feel good as a fan to be like, hey, I appreciate you were thinking of me, even though there's many of us, you know. But like, that's how I felt about, you know, like Avengers Endgame, a lot of these little cute little callbacks, you know, a lot of little digs here, like Jurassic World, it went back to the original, you know, a lot of these movies that have remakes that have these large, you know, either cult following or large fan bases, like with Star Wars lately. I mean, oh, that Luke Skywalker scene at the end of Mandalorian season 2, like I watched it 6 times in a row. Cause I was like, oh, like the moment I saw the X-Wing, I had zero doubt that that wasn't Luke Skywalker. And then he shows up. Like, I think they're finally starting to get things right. And I think the Bad Batch is really a huge testament to that. Cause not only is there little fan service things here and there, like with the Rancor and the Hutt family, and seeing, you know, bounty hunters from Clone Wars like Cad Bane, or bounty hunters from The Mandalorian, like trying to tie this world together. And I think you made the comment to me weeks ago about, like, you don't want them to make the universe so small, but it's nice to see those little things. And they're not, you know, they're not like red herrings, or they're not, you know, plot devices. Like, they're just generally part of the story. And then I think at the base of all of that, in the Bad Batch specifically, is there is a really good overarching story that has a defined start, has a defined ending, and it really paints a picture about what Star Wars is really about. And that's something that I love having conversations with people, because in too many films, or, you know, and too many stories over generations, it's always good versus evil, which goes back to biblical times. Like, I get that. But a lot of times, I think some of the best stories are the ones where you question what's good, what's evil, you know, the bigger picture of Star Wars, which I really thought the sequel trilogy was going to go that direction, was it's not about good versus evil. It's not about right versus wrong. I mean, you know, only a Sith deals in absolutes, Tyler. you know, it's all about balance. It's about temperance. It's about the light and the dark coexisting. And so I think, you know, with Star Wars, like having the Bad Batch and having these characters, especially someone as, like I said, as wise as Omega, like you said, showing up out of nowhere. But I watched Screen Crush is a YouTube channel I follow. And something he said that has stuck with me this whole time is she really humanizes the Bad Batch. She makes them think about things they would never have thought of because they're clones and they were, you know, they're taught to follow orders. And that's kind of Crosshair's whole story arc. Mm-hmm. And so kind of diving headfirst in both episodes, like the conflict with Crosshair isn't the inhibitor chip, which was mind blowing. I was right. No way. When he's like, oh, I had that removed a while ago. And they're like, when? He's like, does it really matter? And I was like, like just right to the heart. But Omega and him had moments at the beginning of the season and then at the end of the season. And I you know, in your notes here, you talked about like he made that comment of like, hey, if you guys really thought what was best for her, like you need to let her go. And they're like, no, she's family. And I think that's a point that I think families in general and any movie, I mean, you know, Godfather, you know, it comes to mind right away. Like sometimes just like you want, like Michael Corleone went to the military. He wasn't supposed to be a part of the family business. And Vito Corleone says that to him on, you know, on his hospital bed. And you don't think about those things because you're like, dude, I'd do anything for family. And like, I'm really hoping in season two, that's kind of the direction that they're going to go is obviously their struggles with the Empire, kind of, you know, kind of like what Rebels did where, you know, Rebels was like starting the rebellion, doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff before you had like the Rogue One type actual rebellion. So, you know, here we're going to follow this group of characters, you know, and seeing like, you know, what role is Omega going to play? What are they going to do with her? Like, should they let her go and be her own person? Obviously there's the theory that she is a Palpatine clone or force sensitive. So I'm excited to see that. But when Crosshair said that, like there were a lot of awesome conversation pieces in those last episodes. And
yes,
and, I saw your in your notes specifically on that first part, episode 15, where you said like, you know, giving them a chance to join him and say, hey, like, come on, like come to the Empire. And, you know, that's kind of like that whole Darth Vader Luke conversation, the actual conversation between Hunter and Crosshair on who's right, who's wrong. Again, is Anakin, Obi-Wan, you know, Darth Vader, Luke. I mean, you know, the entire Star Wars saga, it isn't right, wrong, good, evil. It is about balance, and a lot of it is based on your own interpretation. I mean, you and I, we're completely different people, raised completely different ways. You know, you grew up here. I grew up in Indianapolis. And so maybe certain experiences that we go through and some trials and tribulations, we would interpret things different ways and we would handle them differently. But at the end of the day, you know, it's whatever's got to get done, it's got to get done. And so that's my favorite thing when you unfortunately have to read between the lines in the prequel trilogy is, what would have happened if Anakin was trained by Qui-Gon? Would he have been, you know, more strong-minded? You know, the decisions he made as a result of his visions, his mother still would have died, but he wouldn't have completely turned to the dark side. Maybe, you know, maybe he'd be at peace with it. You know, the same goes for Padme. Like when Palpatine says like, you killed her in your anger, like he's not wrong. He's not right, but he's not wrong. You know, it's just one of those things where Anakin never once in that entire prequel trilogy stopped and thought, is there a consequence to this? And can I live with myself? You know, I think a lot of Star Wars is that. And that's why Return of the Jedi has been one of my favorite movies. And as I've gotten older, it's has such a larger impact because of, I mean, Luke growing up an orphan and you find out your dad's alive, like in so many different movies and stories, we see that person begin to have compassion and maybe even defend them. And so here we got Hunter and Crosshair where Crosshair's like, hey man, let me prove to you, I still care about you, even though you didn't give me, you didn't come save me or give me a chance. Now let's join the Empire. And they're just like, what? Like, are you crazy? Yeah. And they just could, neither side could have the open-mindedness to have any sort of mature conversation about it. And then right at the end, Crosshair just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you a head start, you know, I'm going to, but I will find you. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the way they ended the show, the show itself and Omega as a character. I mean, she, like I said, she really humanizes them and brings such depth to these group of guys, you know?
And it shows you with, you know, those four being around Omega for the entirety of the series and Crosshair being, you know, absent from that. You see that, like you said, you see the humanness and the compassion from them and their open-mindedness towards this family kind of concept, where Crosshair doesn't have that at all because he's not been around Omega to have him teach him how that, like, you know, almost reach those inner feelings, if you will, you know, and understand like how this is. Cause you saw it from Hunter pretty early on where like he yelled at her when she went out and disobeyed orders and was scared, you know, where, and then we saw, I forget the clone off the top of my head. Was it Gregor maybe? Where he's like, oh, she's just a kid. She's scared. Like, don't yell at her. And, you know, you kind of see that like aha moment from Hunter there. And, you know, Crosshair, since he's not there, doesn't get any of that.
Well, and also Crosshair sees the, like, so I have this conversation at my job every day because I'm predominantly surrounded by women. I'm in a large corporate organization, but they're very forward. And so I feel comfortable being vulnerable. I feel comfortable asking for help, getting my work done, but also like I have to look inward a lot of times. Whereas being raised, you know, in the football culture that I was, everything was yes or no, sir. Everything was just get it done. Everything was, it's not my problem. It's your problem. Everything was teamwork. And so like with Crosshair, he's like, I don't understand why you think the Empire's bad. Like, yes, it has conformity, but look at how prosperous they could be. And that's their propaganda. I mean, you know, even when you think about like the Nazis in North Korea currently, it's like, you don't know how bad you have something unless some, like, there's always, like How I Mentioned Mother's one of my favorite shows. And Barney Stinson says, you don't know you're lied to until you're told the truth. And that's what a dictatorship type propaganda is. And so with Crosshair, he sees the value and the security in that. Whereas with Hunter in that group where you talked about like having that open mind, like a republic is what we have in the United States. And so people are just comfortable speaking their mind. Unfortunately, with social media, it's kind of like on steroids now. But, you know, you brought up a really good point. And with each character, they have their enhancements with tech, and Hunter's obviously very skilled. You know, leader type character. And then you have Wrecker, who's just, you know, a brute, and he's going to be punching things. But Wrecker is the kindest. Mm-hmm. He is the most open-minded. And because his enhancement is all about strength, like I was really nervous that he was just going to be this dumb character, like just, you know, being the heavy. But I think he has some of my favorite moments in the entire show, especially when he's held back on some of those covert missions, when he's held back with tech. But even with tech, a lot of those scenes are great too, where he's like, you know, the odds aren't going to work out. Like, don't do this. Don't do that. Like, it's not logical. Like, he's just thinking so much. And Omega's like, they need our help. Like, are you stupid? Like,
yeah,
their brains just, you know, they have all these strengths because they're mutated in a good way, but then they have such these gaps in their weaknesses. And you know, kind of goes to your point of like Hunter not understanding that she's not a military personnel. Like, she's, I mean, the closest thing to human that any of them will ever be around, especially now.
Yeah. I just, the way they made Omega and the Bad Batch work and coexist together was just so beautifully done. And it was that, you know, that yin and that yang, you know, the two sides of the coin. And yeah, like just the compassion she shows, and you see it from Crosshair kind of at the end. I feel like in that very last episode where he is having those moments where like he's still shutting himself off to her, but you can almost physically see his internal struggle at the same time, you know, because there's that moment, I think it's in the last episode, episode 16, where they're almost out. They're trying to get out. And he sits down and he just has his head like in his hands. And to me, that's not one of those like, oh, I'm worn out moments. It's one of those like, I'm struggling internally moments. And she sits down and talks to him, and he just tries to brush it off and tell her to go away. You know, but it's going to be very interesting to see how season two goes forward with the whole Crosshair situation. I'm assuming there will be a redemption arc. Or maybe, and this would be really nice, they go with like what we've been talking about, what you've really been referring to, in that really gray area of there is no right or wrong there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be that internal, like, internal struggle, because every character really seems to have that. It's just a matter of how do you execute it and pull it off. Because, like, personally, I think Kylo Ren was the perfect example, was going to be the perfect example, at least, of that internal struggle. And I just don't think, I think it was executed well, but wasn't, it didn't work out in the end. You know, I don't think, like, the ending to that story was good enough. I don't know.
To the Kylo Ren point that you're trying to make is, see, I knew exactly when in The Force Awakens, when he looked at his dad, Han Solo, and was like,
spoilers.
I know. when he looked at him and he said, you know, I know what I have to do, and I don't know if I have the strength to do it. Like, he genuinely was asking his dad,
yes,
be like, hey, I need to murder you, and I'm afraid of, I can't do it. And being a parent, you know, I don't know what it's like, but, you know, you have that unconditional love for your child, and it's like, I can see that you're in pain, and there's a way that I can stop this pain. Let me stop it for you. And they allude to that in Rise of Skywalker, which I think is one of my favorite parts. But, you know, yeah, I don't think they handled it very well exactly. Yeah. But you could, yeah, I mean, I said it the moment that movie came out. I said, man, that's the angsty teenager that we needed. That's the one that we needed, not the one we deserved. The one we deserved was Anakin from the prequel trilogy. to your point within the Bad Batch specifically, you know, you have notes in here about the TK troopers and how cool they look. And I think that's something I've always wondered as a kid. And so in the prequel trilogy, it was cool to see the clones come out, and like the clones and the good guys or the Republic have blue lasers, and the bad guys have, the Separatists have red.
Yeah.
Because in the original trilogy, it's the opposite. The bad guys have green, and the good guys or the Rebellion have red. Yep. And I had always wondered. And so it was really cool to see that. And you see the clones, you're like, oh, this is how the clone design looked. And then you get to Revenge of the Sith, and, you know, maybe their helmets look a little more like stormtroopers instead of clone troopers. And then, you know, during the Clone Wars, you see everybody grow and mature. And I love how they did that then. But here they really hammer home of, like, first of all, the clones are expensive. And you see that all the time. So it's like, okay, they're already going to start outsourcing. Even though the clones are designed, like, literally, to follow orders and you know, good soldiers follow orders, there's that risk that they – especially since they fought in the Clone Wars, which was a different type of conflict. Like, the Clone Wars was pride in your country, you know?
Yeah.
Like, people who fight for the United States in the military, they do it because they're proud to be an American and they have the opportunity, and they're proud to serve. Whereas maybe in other countries where you're required to serve, it's a different feeling. So with the Empire, they're just like, hey, they're just going to start snatching up babies and train them that way and brainwash them basically to be these stormtroopers, which, you know, if you watch the original trilogy, we all know they can't, can't hit their mark except unless they're Jawas. Cause, same, you know, we all know sand people walk
single file
to hide their numbers. Exactly. But I do love that part about the show as well, where there's so many good pieces that they kind of do that transition, and then a moment when you realize that they transferred everybody off world. Like, I'm so curious to see how they handle that. Like, did they just put them on a world and explode them? Like, you know,
right?
A trap. Like, obviously, Crosshair saw value, and they saw value in Crosshair to train them, but like, I'm really curious to see how that plays out as well, to really go through that full transition of, because when you look at like Tarkin and those guys, like, they're evil, like, they're bad guys. They're not, 100%. There's no doubt there. But then with the stormtroopers and again, like, there's so many good things in that sequel trilogy, like with Finn, like, he's like, dude, I don't want to just murder these people. Like, are we crazy here? Like, does nobody else like have emotion? Cause he's human. He's not a clone. You know, it's propaganda. It's what it is. You know, we saw that in the Loki show the whole time, you know, they talk about uniformity. I thought that was awesome too, where, you know, in the show showing the TK troopers and like all this other stuff, the dark troopers, things like that, because it really goes from duty to, like almost a necessity, like, hey, you're going to serve in the military. Kind of, you know, kind of what Han Solo did. Like, Han Solo
put
himself in that spot to be like, okay, it's either go in the military or die by this giant worm.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, and it'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting because you already see that the clone troopers were being phased out. Like, the clone troopers that were with Crosshair, they clearly weren't clone troopers. Like, you heard different voices. It wasn't the same voices we're familiar with. It was clearly different people. But, you know, Hunter alludes to it at in the season finale, where he says to Crosshair, hey, you're always going to be a number to them. Like, you will not matter to them.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, once he gets picked up by the Empire, like, will he be of value to them? You know, are they just going to take him out? Which I, you know, highly doubt, just because of the show, obviously. But, like, you know, maybe that's what season 2 will be about, is them rescuing Crosshair from the Empire. I don't know. I talked about it with Daniel before in the past, and I brought it up on a past episode. I don't think I've talked to you about it, but what do you think of the theory that Crosshair is either like the prototype or maybe the inspiration for like the Death Troopers down the line, because they're so elite?
So that was my thought, especially since the Death Troopers have come back around in the again, applause to Dave Filoni, like, your note about the TK Troopers, and like, that's kind of how the original artwork looked.
Yeah.
I love the fact that in new Star Wars, they're bringing stuff back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not even like it's not nods like or winks to us as fans. It's like, hey, we have all this intellectual property, let's use it. And they've done that in The Mandalorian so many times. And even with characters, they're starting, because I saw a theory that one of the I guess Dark Trooper characters you're alluding to, is she's a female, but she plays a key role in the Darth Vader comics, I believe. Or it's either Darth Vader, or she was like Thrawn's assistant or something. But I think that's awesome. I love the fact that they're doing that, and I like that theory that they were the inspiration for the Dark Troopers.
You know, yeah, like, and you see, like, Crosshair has that dark armor, and the clone troopers around him have that dark armor with like the greenish visor. I don't know why I said it like that, but yeah, and like that's what that's what they have. You know, that's what the Death Troopers are. So that would be cool. Like, if, and I trust Filoni to work that in however he can. Like, that would be super cool, but I don't know, like, maybe that's the way they utilize Crosshair, you know, maybe, because I got to imagine, like, these guys are going to be the only clones left, right? Other than, like, Captain Rex and all of that.
Yeah.
That we'll see later. Like, those are it, I imagine. Yeah.
Which, you know, there were moments where, like Hunter got shot by Cad Bane. I was like, oh, man, they're going to start dropping like flies. Like, we were talking about, like, Rogue One. You know, they die in Rogue One. So you're like, how do they die? So I thought they were going to do that. I'm glad they didn't, because that means, you know, we're going to get another season. But you know, to your point, like, I remember, like, you have in your notes here, like, Hunter saying blind allegiance makes you a pawn.
And
you're talking about, I mean, yeah, what a line.
I'm God, just, dude, what so a many line. Lines.
What's the other one you have in here? What is it, Admiral Tarkin? What does he say?
Oh, he just said famous, you may fire when ready.
Oh yeah. 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 Oh. Just like, just like the iconic, it's on Dantooine. Okay. You may fire. What? I just told you. Like, well, you know, we'll find out.
Too bad.
If you're lying, we just destroyed the rebel base. If you're not lying, hey, bummer.
Which, like, punishment for lying.
Dude, I know, man. It's just like, oh, poor Alderaan. They got all the flack. But no, seriously, the whole blind allegiance makes you a pawn. Like, that goes back to what you're saying about being numbers. And that alludes to that whole dictatorship type of propaganda. And what was it when they first had the episode with the Dark Troopers? And they were like, all right, let's, you know, kill them. And that one guy,
Mandalorian? So
no. It was in the Bad Batch when they first put the group. Of,
oh, when they go to the,
on their yes. trial run.
Okay, yeah, because the, like, one guy says no, like, I don't want to.
Yeah, and he killed Aminium. He's just like, boom, done. Because that was what his orders were like, hey, if they can't get it done, he's done. Like, kill him. And it was just like, because he's a clone, he has that ruthlessness of like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do my job. And humans have that ability. But if you do, but then that's why they probably do it from birth instead of getting people in there, because it's like, it is blind allegiance. Now,
if he
believes in what the Empire stands for and what the Empire is trying to do, that's different, because that's what I was talking about earlier with the Republic, of like, you want to make sure you know what you're fighting for. And I think that's going on right now in the United States, like with a lot of the COVID stuff and the vaccine stuff and whatever, you know, when it comes to, you know, electing officials or what, you know, whatever you stand for at this point, like, you need to find a way to form an opinion, because like, you're just like, I don't want to get the vaccine for XYZ reason, or I got the vaccine for XYZ reason. Yeah. Like, you still don't want to do that blindly, you know?
Right.
Like if you're gonna vote for a president, or you're gonna, I don't know, eat at McDonald's, like have an educated, informed decision about it. And I think that's the point that Hunter's trying to get across here. But it's funny and ironic at the same time, because Hunter's doing kind of the reverse of that. Like he's saying I guess you would call it blind disallegiance. Like not once did he consider, like,
what is the empire doing?
Yeah.
Like, how can they help?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, not once did he say, would I fit in this larger picture, you know? And it's like, oh yeah, like it is irony. Cause when you think about the larger Star Wars picture, like look at Luke and Darth Vader. Like Luke probably crossed his mind multiple times to be like, you know what? Like my father offered me his hand. Not literally, but he wanted him to rule by his side, you know, in the galaxy. I mean, how tempting is that? Like, all I have to do is kill the emperor, and then you and I are, you know, the head honchos. Like, that's also the Sith way. And so Luke knows that. Luke understands that. But I think, based, you know, with his meditation and conversations with Obi-Wan and Yoda, I'm sure Yoda and Obi-Wan specifically admitted their wrongs of, like, we were so blind to the dark side. And the Republic, the Jedi under the Republic, they had blind allegiance to the Republic, which is when you think about that line of Obi-Wan saying, my allegiance is to the Republic, you know, to democracy. Yeah. Like, why though? You're a Jedi. You shouldn't have any allegiances, you know?
Exactly.
So like when you think about that line, and Anakin comes back, and it's like, that's that interpretation. That's that conflict that we're talking about here that nobody really takes into consideration of. It's all based on your interpretation. And so the fact that Anakin is just doing, he was doing everything selfishly to save Padme, which again, didn't actually cause her death. But like Obi-Wan doing what he did just pushed him further away, you know? And so like here with the Bad Batch, it's the same thing with Crosshair. He's trying to reason with Hunter. And Hunter is just like close-minded, like you're a bad guy, they're the bad guy, I'm not even going to consider your idea. And to look your brother in the eye and do that, like that's got to hurt. Like that has to crush Crosshair. Mm-hmm. And I think you talking about like his hands in his face, because Omega, those scenes are parallel. That happened in, I think, the first episode when he was like, dude, what's wrong with me? Like, why did I just try to murder this Jedi kid? And Omega's like, hey, you know, you're not a bad guy. And then she has a conversation in the finale, and it was kind of a similar, like, hey, like, you're not a bad, like, she gets it, but his brothers won't even give him or the Empire a chance. And like, I think that hurts, you know, not to get emotional. Oh yeah.
No, you're totally right. Cause when he says that line in, I think episode 15, that part one, where he literally says, he's like, I'm going to give you the opportunity to do what you didn't give me. And that's a chance. And like, I remember when I heard that, I was like, you're like, oh my God. It's so funny because I hated Crosshair throughout the whole series. But
dude, right? I mean, just annoying. Like, I was like, dude, shut up, man. Like,
oh, he's getting burned by the.
Oh, I was so pumped.
I was like, yeah,
get him. Too.
Yeah. And then he says that, and I'm like, I was so mad because I'm like, well, now I can't hate him completely.
Yeah.
He's just, right? He's upset. And, you know,
that's the beauty of Star Wars is it's, you shouldn't have to hate these characters. Like, even the Emperor, which, I mean, he's just old and crusty and gross. Like, I mean, in the prequel, so that's the sequel trilogy, I hate him. I mean, he's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Actor's great. Love him.
Fantastic.
But like he was acting out of the interest of Naboo and himself in episode one. He was acting out of the interest of the Republic. Like in his mind, he thought he was doing what was right for the people. And then he realized, which I'm sure he realized this long before the films, but from what we could see, he goes, well, what if we had a galactic empire? Then we would have free trade. We would have prosperity. We would have a collected military. Like all those things kind of start feeding into his mind. And so he thinks he's acting out of an interest. And then so it's like, I guess I can't hate the empire or the emperor for doing what he did. I mean, he's kind of a tool for manipulating the Republic and the separatists. Like how shitty was that? But yeah. Oh man. I know. I hated Crosshair. Cause I just like, Crosshair, like suck it up, dude. Like quit being a baby.
Yeah.
And then when he says that, it never dawned on me that the rest of the Bad Batch never were like, hey man, doing okay, bro.
Yeah.
We just ordered this whole Order 66 thing. Pretty, pretty weird. Like just making small talk, like weird, like instead of like, how's the weather? Like, oh man, you hear about Hoth? A little heat wave.
Oh man, got up to 47. Well, yeah, right? And that's the thing too. Us as an audience, we're in the same position that Hunter and they're in. We are literally in their position where as soon as he said that, we all feel the same thing I assume Hunter would have felt. And we're like, shit, like, you're right. Like, I never, like, gave you the choice. I never asked or, like, how you felt about it. Yeah.
What a gut punch.
And I think that's why, like, because it's, we were close-minded to it as an audience, you know?
Yeah.
And
because we know the Empire's bad. We know what's going to happen. There's, I mean, the moment the Death Star gets constructed and they start exploding planets, like that's the whole good, you know, the good versus evil comes into play. Like
if something is officially called the Death Star,
right?
There's no good with it.
Yeah, like just it's a Death Star. Yeah, yeah, but it's art. It doesn't even work. It's not fully functioning.
yeah. Just like, a centerpiece. Yeah.
That's like Thanos. Like, it's random. It's fair. Yeah, it's still genocide, bro.
Like, right?
Still murdering the entire universe. You know, there's that theory of like, well, why didn't Thanos just double resources in the entire universe? And I was like,
yeah.
But you know, but that I think that is such a huge testament though to us as humans because we get that way. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest pieces of maturity. And I think it's kind of what we're lacking today with social media and this just vast access of information out there is so many people form an opinion and they're like, let me stick to it. So I was just ranting about people not forming, you know, their own opinion, their own educated opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so perfect example, The Last Jedi, you and I don't see eye to eye, but we can still coexist. Right. Like, I'm not like, I'm never talking to Tyler again because he's dumb. And the whole casino scene was just ridiculous. And why didn't they tell Poe about the plan and blah, blah, blah. But like, I always tell people, I said, the biggest criticisms I have on The Last Jedi, there's a lot of great in there. Don't get me wrong. But with the first time I saw the film as a Star Wars fan, I hated it because I just feel like all the setup in the last movie, even though it was basically a New Hope remake, you know, it didn't continue. It just immediately cut every single branch of storytelling that could have happened. And you're just like what? Like, imagine if you started watching, you ever seen the show Lost?
Yeah.
Like the first episode of the show Lost sucks you in because you're just like, what the heck? Like, where could this go? Like, imagine if they answered every single question in the second episode and they're like, okay, here we go. Here's the rest of the show. I'd be like, no, I'm bored now. Like, I want to know, like, what's going to, you know, and I think Bad Batch did that very well, too, where, like, I had so many questions at the beginning, and they answered them all throughout the show. Like, it wasn't just in the second episode. But, like, with The Last Jedi, so that was the first thing I hated as a Star Wars fan. But then, secondly, I'm a huge movie fan. As I've gotten older, I've grown to love film as an art form, and I've tried to educate myself on, you know, how do the colors that they're showing me make me feel? How does this music make me feel? You know, where are they trying to stay? Like, I got an argument with someone the other day about how I don't think Shawshank is the greatest film of all time. I think it deserves to be in the top five, but I would argue that The Dark Knight and The Godfather and the most recent film Whiplash are three of the greatest films of all time. Which we can talk about that another time. But so I go in and see The Last Jedi. I was like, okay, let me see this as like a film fan. Like, I'm not a Star Wars fan. I'm coming into this movie. And there were just a lot of notes that I didn't like, right? So I formed my own educated opinion. And so I come to you and say, hey, man, this is what I didn't like, but this is what I did like. So then you come back to me and you give me your opinion. So like, that's good, right? But imagine if I went and saw The Last Jedi and was like, I hate this movie for this reason. And then I will just never, ever,
ever. That's just it.
That's... Yeah. And it's like, I think humans, we do that all the time with all this information out there that it's like, you know, so many times we just take opinion and theories as fact. Like, yeah. there are very few, honestly, in the grand scheme of things, there are very few facts in life.
Yes, I'd agree.
Like, like gravity is a fact. Like, you will never, ever convince me otherwise that gravity does not exist or that the earth is flat. Like, things like that. Like, I will never waver, ever. But, you know, you talked about, like, a lot of those gray areas. Like, Hunter never once sat back and was objective and was like, well, let me hear his side of things. Like, why did he do what he did, like this whole Order 66 thing. And it's just like, you sit there and it's like, okay, I want them to form educated opinions. But at the same time, it's like, okay, but you still got to be open. You still have to listen to the other people's side of things. And again, back to the whole gut punch thing, like, especially your brother of all people, like this dude, this guy that you were not only born with and trained with and went on all these missions that you could have died, like all this history, and you just immediately, it's like, oh, you're a bad guy. See ya. We're out. Like, that's a story in itself right there. And mm-hmm. I'm glad they touched on it, because that really is, I think the larger arc in the Bad Batch, you know, like you said, like you weren't really excited going into it. I mean, I wasn't either, because I was like, I don't want another Clone Wars. Like, I got that, you know, but it really touches on to another side of the Empire, you know, the story, the larger Star Wars story, you know, it shows a different ragtag group that in your mind should be better, should be more educated, should be more informed and mature, where in reality, they're the most immature. They're very naive, and they're equally blindly following orders. I mean, even when they're working for Sid doing all those bounty hunter missions, like, which I love the fact that these Star Wars shows are basically just like one large story with a bunch of side missions, like a video game. Like, that's literally what The Mandalorian is. Like, Baby Yoda.
You're right.
Grogu shows up, and then he's like, all right, I gotta find a Jedi for this kid. 2 seasons later, after 7 side quests, and he's got all this new armor. Like, it's literally Ocarina of Time, you know. But no, it really, like, they touched on it right at the end there, and then you realize, oh, that's the story that you were trying to tell. Like, that was the point of the Bad Batch. It wasn't like, this is how the Empire got started. This is where the clone troopers went. This is what happened to the Kaminoans. Like, oh, I mean, how devastating was that too? Like,
not only on.
Destroy their planet, but there's, as far as I know, like, there's one Kaminoan left.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I thought Alderaan was bad, but geez.
Is it not? What's worse, the whole planet getting destroyed or blown up into oblivion, or just the whole, like, species but one, yeah, and like the civilization? I don't know.
And she's, you could argue she's a slave now. Like,
oh, yo, for sure.
We're gonna be,
she's exactly what Galen Erso is, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, maybe she's, honestly, maybe obviously her cloning techniques are gonna be what drives, you know, the Emperor into doing his cloning thing for,
yeah,
that's clearly new information.
I mean, that's, you're still, right, like, everyone's talking about it. They're like, oh, so like, there's the theory that Omega is an like Rey's mom or a grandma. Yeah, I don't know, right? Or at least has DNA. And it's like, okay, can we like pump the brakes on this whole like Palpatine once a clone thing? Because that's still fresh. Like, let's figure out what Metachlorians are first. All right, it's been a couple years.
Those don't matter anymore, man. See, that's already a thing. I'm pretty sure that doesn't count,
dude. No, it still does. I think I'm pretty sure what is canon now is it's a large midichlorian count and the Force, like, working together.
Oh, so, we need, know, multiple things. Okay. Yeah. Qui-Gon failed to mention that.
Yeah. It's not like, his midichlorian count is higher than Master Yoda's. Oh, that's great. Yeah. But he's also Force sensitive. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'm
wasn't
wrong.
Worried until that last part.
I know, right? They're like, oh, wait, really? Huh? He could be the chosen one. Who knows? Oh,
gosh.
You were the chosen one. hey, what about finding out that your buddy is Nick, his real name is Alpha?
What?
You know what I'm talking about. Get him, Dad. Get him, Dad.
Yeah, right.
I just wanted to hear you say get him, Dad. But yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Get him, Dad. No, got him, Dad. Got him, Dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, that was my favorite part about Mandalorian season 2 was when he dropped that bomb and I got to hear the wow again.
Oh, dude. The best sound/not sound. Like,
That's like that meme where it's like, oh, I bet he's thinking about other women, and it shows him, and you just like, or the memes where it's like, you can't hear pictures, and then you like see that part of episode 2 and you're like, yep, I know what sound that is.
Did I ever tell you the story of like me watching that episode of Mando season 2? So I was literally, I was at Universal Studios in Florida, and me and Daniel were there. We were trying to watch it because it dropped. It was like a Friday. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to get anything spoiled, but because we're going to be on our phones in these lines, so we don't want to like come across something. Let's try to watch it. We're in this like 2-hour line. Like, let's try to watch it. And the line is queuing like you know, up and down. So you're mm-hmm. like coming across the same people every few minutes. And I'm trying to watch this, and this guy's like, oh, like you're watching Mando. And we start talking about Star Wars. And I'm trying to watch Boba Fett just like beat all this ass. And this yeah. guy's like talking to me. He's a super nice guy, but I'm like, man, I'm trying to watch Boba Fett kick some ass right now. Like, all right, I'm gonna have to talk to you later, man. Even though I will never see you again, probably. Yeah. But yeah, dude, Boba Fett and this. Dude, God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so what? Yeah. What were your thoughts on like you got Alpha and Omega? Like originally the story we were told that Jango Fett asked for an off. The deal was Jango Fett said, "Hey, you could use my DNA to clone me for your army, but I want one of my own." Doesn't have an inhibitor chip, mm-hmm. doesn't have advanced aging or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And isn't genetically modified at all. Like I literally want, I pretty much want Jango Fett Jr. Yeah. Like but, a descendant, yeah. you know, like, so you're like in your head, you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. Okay. That's what he wanted. What a good deal. And now you're like, oh, there's Alpha and Omega. Like what's,
well, and
what,
and
what they sparked that?
So I can't remember her name. Holloway. I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
Oh, the scientist?
Yeah. So she had a whole like lab and like a whole secret, like, you know, way in and out, right? It wasn't on the schematics. So it was very secretive. I almost kind of think, like, clearly the Bad Batch, they were like, oh, these are enhanced soldiers. Let's, you know, put them out in the field. They can do a lot of good. I kind of think like no one really knows about Omega. Like, I kind of think that was almost maybe a secret project of hers.
Yeah.
Like, that she did. Maybe she created her probably at the same time as Boba, mm-hmm. my guess. Yeah. And because you don't really ever hear the Empire mention her.
Yeah, I think originally the theory about Palpatine, like her being like part of Palpatine, I think that pretty much was squashed by the fact that once you found out who hired the bounty hunters to go get her, it was like, oh, that was their contingency plan.
But yeah, because the only people you hear talk about her are the yeah. Kaminoans.
Yeah.
When but one wants to get her to kill her and one wants to get her to save yeah. her.
But that's the crazy thing about the contingency plan is, is regardless of what would have happened with Omega, your race would still get decimated. Like that blows my right. mind to think about. Like you had this contingency plan and the Empire was still two steps ahead of you. Like,
well, bummer. And like maybe I missed something. I feel like we don't really know what the contingency plan was though either. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if it was like if he was going to use it as a bargaining chip of some sort and been like I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think the theory of her being force sensitive holds more weight, because maybe they'd be like, "Hey guys, by the way, got this clone, force sensitive, could be an asset to the Empire, you know."
Yeah.
Which I think would be cool if Darth Vader does come around and, you know, pops in here. And anywhere that anyone can pop Darth Vader in there, like, I need that. Like, I saw someone post about, they're like, we need the next Star Wars show or next Star Wars movie. They need to make a John Wick type movie about Starkiller just trying to hunt down Darth Vader. And God, I was like, oh my God, that would be the coolest movie of all time. One, Darth Vader's the shit. Second of all, like, could you imagine like a quick, witty, awesome action flick in Star? I think Star Wars needs that too. Like, they need a good, like, old school or new school action movie. Like, because that was my favorite thing. That was another of my favorite things about Rogue One was like it felt like a cool war film, like a you know, like Apocalypse Now kind of, you know, Platoon, like that type of movie where, you know, again, this ragtag group. Like, it wasn't covert. Like, it wasn't like a thriller like Ocean's 11 or things like that. Like, it was just like it felt pretty badass.
And then in that same vein, almost Mando was almost that Western really, really needed. I felt like I'll be curious to see, because we keep getting rumors that the next Doctor Strange movie is going to be more like horror themed, more horror.
Sam Raimi is directing it, so
yeah. I'm curious if that does really well, which I assume it will. Mm-hmm. How Star Wars or how they'll come back with the Star Wars, if they'll be like, well, if it works for Marvel, we can definitely get it to work for Star Wars. Because you could do like a dark movie, like even if it's like a one-off of like a Darth Maul like origin or something, or, you know, Plagueis something, you could do something dark, I think, and still, you know, bring a lot of audience.
But see, that's where like the whole like kids movie thing. And I'm so glad that even Disney is flirting with bringing Deadpool into the MCU, because like I just watched Free Guy when it came out a week ago. Mm-hmm. And after the, my first immediate thought was like watching Free Guy, I was like, you could easily bring Deadpool into the MCU and make it work. I don't rated R or not, you know, and the same goes for Venom. Like I'm so glad that Disney, I think Disney really is starting to take risks. Marvel is starting to take risks. Star Wars is, cause I do think you are correct. I think with the way Star Wars is, cause I've learned now that Star Wars isn't sci-fi, it's fantasy. And because the true definition of a sci-fi film is it has to be based in science.
Yeah.
So like a show like The Martian, which takes place in the future, is considered sci-fi. You know, Blade Runner, things like that.
Yeah.
Whereas Star Wars is still kind of in that
space like, fantasy.
The Rings. Yeah, I mean, it's space opera, space western, space samurai movie, whatever you want to call it. Speaking of samurai movie, how about that freaking Star Wars anime series? That looks But anyways, no, I think you are right. I would like to see the superhero genre or Star Wars. Maybe even Star Trek. I don't care. They can prove to the masses and say like superhero genre isn't a thing. Like this is art. This is cinema. Let me prove it to you by putting it in these different genres. And I think Star Wars would work very well that way too. Like you said, being like a really cool action type movie, or like with Mandalorian being a Western, like I think Star Wars would work awesome as a horror film. I think it'd be terrifying considering the high concepts there.
Yeah.
You could do an older, you know, Old Republic type thing and make it a medieval, you know, type film or like Braveheart, you know, things like that. Like really, really dive deep and show the subgenres. I mean, heck, you could make you could remake Attack of the Clones and make it a rom-com. That would be awesome.
Probably would turn out way better.
That's
way more sense.
If I could change one thing from any Star Wars film, I think you talked about this on your podcast before. Didn't you guys do script rewrites or something?
We started to. Yeah.
Dude, my number one script rewrite here. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, all you episode one haters out there.
These shouldn't exist.
Star Wars episode two, Attack of the Clones. Yeah. Right. Star Wars episode two, Attack of the Clones is so perfectly set up for a rom-com. Like I would keep the ending the same way. Like Anakin and Padme are about to die. Like people that are physically attracted to each other, sexually attracted to each other, even if you have the smallest amount of feeling about somebody and you're about to get murdered in front of a live audience, like you're telling me that you wouldn't just naturally look over and say like, I think I love you. Like, why not? What's the worst that could happen? You die and you don't like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that movie, it's so cringy. Like I've never stopped thinking about you. Like Anakin, chill, bro. Like, I mean, come on, man. Look, at least act cool. Like I understand you're still like a 12-year-old boy.
He doesn't even act cool, does he?
God, he's such a freaking loser, man. But even Padme, like what was it that made her like switch and be like, I'm deeply, madly, truly in love with you.
It is
like,
a flip of a switch, isn't it? Because she's so turned off from it throughout the whole movie, it seems like.
Well, she's clear about the whole, like, friend zone. And then she sees the torment that he goes through with his mother. But that's after they have the little montage on Naboo. Like they have their little montage, and that, you know, that's where they actually fall in love, where they show. He's like, oh, I hate sand. It's coarse. It gets everywhere.
It's like sand too.
Like you. Like, is this really like Beauty and the Beast? Like, you really got Stockholm Syndrome? Like, what the hell?
Right.
Padme, you're a badass, dude. You're an independent woman who was a queen. Still a queen. All right. Always a queen. Right, forever queen. Not queen. Yeah. a senator. You're educated. You're smart. You're still young. You're easily the sexiest girl in the galaxy. You got this freaking Anakin kid who's like literally still a child. And yeah, he's a Jedi and he can use the Force. But like... So could Plo Koon and but like if I could rewrite that movie, man, I mean it'd be such a good, because think of, like, you just let that natural relationship progress, and then the best part about it is every rom-com needs that witty best friend. Who's the witty best friend? Oh, hey, Daddy Juan Kenobi. You know what I'm saying?
Daddy Juan Kenobi.
He shows up and he's just like, he's got the one-liners and the jokes and, you know, he's there for Anakin. And then at the end, he's like, oh, what are you two doing here? Oh, we're rescuing you. Oh, good job. Like,
yeah,
anything could play out the exact, like the movie would play, like you could keep all the same hits, but it was just like, oh man, it's like, dude, you have an organic, George Lucas, you have an organic love story here and you ruined it by being like, I don't think George Lucas flirted with a woman his whole life. Like, I'm convinced.
No, no way. No,
like he may have went to USC, but that guy does not.
No way. No, dude, he played with puppets or something. You already know.
That was... Oh yeah. Him and Frank Oz were sitting there like, oh, hi, I'm Elmo. Oh, sorry. That's a bad joke.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Oh,
God.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Someone please make a trailer for that or something.
Oh, dude, right?
Even a trailer. Oh, that's...
Well, just like that remake of, what is it, Scene 38 or whatever from A New Hope. You've seen that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the concept of that, I mean, I hate to say it, and I might get a ton of criticism for this. I would not be upset if they remade Star Wars. But here's where I would take people to task. I would try to stick to the original source material, but I would like to see it from 1 through 9 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, add in some of those extra things. And the thing I hate the most about, especially the sequel trilogy specifically, because at least with the prequel trilogy, there was already content out there about like the Clone Wars and things like that. Yeah. And stuff. And you already had like, you know, you fought in the Clone Wars with my father, things like that. Like, you already had some of that backstory. But with the sequel trilogy, there's so much of the books that you have to read for that. There's so much of the actual like novelization of the films where they talk about, like, I didn't even know who Thrawn was until I listened to your podcast. Mm-hmm. and watched Rebels, things like that. And they talk about the battle that took a place near Jakku. And you're like, who cares about this stuff? Like, I want to watch a movie and I want you to tell me exactly what's happening in the movie. I don't want to see what's happening off screen. That's what deleted scenes are for, you know? I mean, right. I think, like, Lord of the Rings is one of the greatest trilogies of all time. I mean, if there's rumors that they're coming, that Peter Jackson has like an extended director's edition, which is going to be like 6 hours per God. Movie. It's just going to be like more scenery. It's going to like, no, I'm not kidding. I'm pretty sure that's a thing, God. You know,
I'm not surprised at all.
I'm still going to watch it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. But like, tell me what's there. And again, you know, tying all that back into the Bad Batch, you know, with a lot of the themes and what they could do. I think this movie really, really played well as a nice little family drama, because even the side missions like had a key role to play in the larger story. But also like, they didn't leave necessarily anything up for interpretation. Like, they pretty much told you point blank what was going on. And mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool to see the whole Hera story play out, as young as she was. And it was cool. She had the accent and it's like, oh, you know, they explained those things away.
Yeah.
But really, like, you see the Hera story, 'cause if you remember from Rebels, like, she hadn't really been back there in a while. And that was, you know, occupied by the Empire for the longest time, things like that. And they're pretty much straight up about it. And then, you know, the advice she gives to Omega about, like, you know, kind of says, search your feelings, you know, to be true in her own way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's like, there's so much content there. Whereas, like, I think the sequel trilogy missed out on a lot of that stuff. And you know, obviously the prequel trilogy have relied way too heavily on CGI. But
yeah, so
I think... Yeah. Yeah, if I could rewrite, I mean, yeah, there's your rom-com right there, dude. Attack of the Clones.
I love it.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
God, did you hear, speaking of CGI, did you hear what Ewan McGregor said a few months ago on the interview about working on the new Kenobi show? Where
I don't remember, but I did see something about that.
Yeah. It was him and Pedro Pascal. It was that actor-on-actor interview thing. Super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about that new technology they have where, like, basically
I remember,
you're in the scene, you know, you're not on a green screen. And Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor said it was super cool working with, like, stormtroopers, because during the prequels, it was literally just green screens and blue screens. There were no clone troopers or anything.
He said
like
he was
that.
Geeked.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, oh my God, it's a stormtrooper. Like
it was his first time.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, like, it's just crazy. It's really cool how, like, I think, going back to kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the show, it's cool when, like, movies in shows use like real props or real things. Mm-hmm. Like, because it brings a different element. And I had just found this out the other day. Mark Hamill had posted something. I don't know if you've seen this. It was from episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. You know, when he's battling Vader on Dagobah and it's mm-hmm. like a reflection of himself. Helmet mm-hmm. blows up. He sees himself. Well, like they actually had a mold of Mark Hamill made up, but it looked so bad. They're like, we can't use this. So what they did is they're like, well, what do we do instead? They literally had Mark Hamill get in the, like, put the helmet on, lay down, and then buried his body under the dirt. And like, that's actually how they got that shot.
Oh, but that so scene, I just got chills, man. Like yeah. that scene, I mean, what that means to the greater story.
Yeah. And like
that, that plays so well.
Yeah. And, you know, and they use like actually Mark Hamill and not some like mm-hmm. prop, you know, they use the real thing. And mm-hmm. it's just, I think TV shows and movies mm-hmm. need to go back to that almost, you know, go back to what works. You don't have to rely so heavily on technology, yeah. even though it's available. Like
I like what the MCU did, and they did it as early as the first Iron Man movie, is like Robert Downey Jr. like still wears part of an Iron Man suit.
Yes. You know?
Like things like that. And I think that helps the actors a little bit, but then also all they're doing is touching up, like Vision, for example, like all they're doing is touching the points on Vision's face. Like he's not, again, yeah, like you said, completely computer generated. And even, you know, Thanos is completely generated and you can see the difference. Like he still kind of looks fake, you know, same, kind of the same with like the whole, I think the whole Professor Hulk thing, I think it makes it look even more fake, which is hilarious because he looks more like a real person. But, you know, there's, what's it called? Your brain. Where you see something that resembles a human and then your brain is like, but that's not human. And so it tells you that it's not human and it like messes with you.
I don't know.
Like, there's a name for that. I think they touch on it in iRobot. But like I think that plays a good a point because like kind of like what you're saying is I'm glad that movies – and obviously specifically Lucasfilm and what's the company that does all the CGI stuff for
ILM?
Yeah, ILM. Yep. Which, they do it for Disney now because Disney owns them. Everything that ILM did day one. I watched. There's an awesome documentary series. The second season just came out on Netflix called "The Films That Made Us." And so ILM was obviously, you know, the big in terms of CGI and props and things like that. And then somebody branched off and started their own company, and they're the ones that worked on Ghostbusters. And I had no idea that a lot of the stuff from Ghostbusters was also a lot of claymation, a lot of real props, and I was like,
wow, I didn't know that.
You know, it's so funny. Like when I talk to my dad about some of those movies, like he loves them. Like even the old, like the OG King Kong movie, like black mm-hmm. and white, like you're like, oh, it's so fake. But then like I watch it now and I have such a new appreciation for it because when I do watch like the 1999 or 1998 Godzilla and, you know, the prequel trilogy for Star Wars and even like parts of the Matrix, you're just like, it looks so fake.
Yeah.
And like I appreciate the people that put the effort into it, but then you're like, I'm disappointed. Like you didn't, like you could have tried harder. Like this could have been a real thing, you know. And I think with the Matrix, to that point in the second film, I don't remember which one, it's like Resurgence or Revolution or whatever, they have the highway scene.
Mm-hmm.
They actually built a highway set, and I think that pays off so much better. And so like with Star Wars, I think going back to the animatronics and the puppets and things like that, and and again putting like celebrities like Daniel Craig and a lot of these Star Wars fans in the movie, I thought that was really cool too. But to your point, and I'm glad Disney's doing that whole What If series too, because the budget that they would have to do the What If series in live action would be insane. So doing
you can never,
I'm perfectly fine. But and I think to the point of like, look at the Mandalorian and what they're limited on. And then look at what they could do in the Clone Wars and Bad Batch, that there's no way they could have done it live action.
Like that whole, the whole where the city goes down and they're getting moved around the water. Like, I mean, you could do that, but your budget is
wild.
That was a cool scene.
That
whole episode was really good.
I was literally on the edge of my seat with the season finale there. Would have been cool. Speaking of genres, I did have this thought. I think I've shared this with you too. Clone Wars. I would love a Clone Wars remake if it was like a Band of Brothers type, like a live action, like if they did, or a Stormtrooper one, like kind of like how they did with Solo at the beginning of the movie where they were fighting. Like, how cool would that be to have to follow a group of stormtroopers through, like, trying to capture the Empire? Yeah. You know, Darth Vader shows up. You know, all these other characters. I think that'd be sweet. But anyways, yeah, dude, that water scene at the end of the show. I mean, what ingenuity that they had to use to escape. Like, it was like a video game. I felt like it was a video game level.
It really was.
You had to escape, and you try going this way. Oh, then this door doesn't work, and you got to go. You got to backtrack, and you got to swim under the water. You know, you're trying to escape this falling. You know, thing. They did it a lot better than Black Widow did. I'll say that. Like, Black Widow had the thing falling from the sky, and she's human, and she's, you know, doing her thing.
Oh yeah,
survived. Like, that was poor. I think that was poorly done. But then here it was like, I felt like there were real stakes. Like, I was nervous that they weren't going to make it out. And then when, AZ like runs out of power and saves Omega's life, I was like, oh my God, this is a freaking droid. Like, who cares? They're a dime a dozen.
It's so funny you say that. I was rewatching them last night in preparation for this. And, fiance literally has not seen any of the Bad Batch series, like none of the shows. And I was rewatching that episode, and we were like in the middle of a conversation, and that scene started happening. And she literally goes, just like stops, goes, oh my God, that's so sad. I'm like, okay. Like, that shows you how like heavy that moment is. Like,
they did that again. They did that two other times. There was, it's not Fives. Who is it? Echo. When Echo had to impersonate a droid, and then he went back there, and there was the protocol droids like, I'm in charge. It's like, well, I'm in charge now. Oh my God, you're not a droid. And he basically freed the droids.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was a really compassionate thing, because they're robots. Like, who cares? They're droids. Like, you know, they're AI, like, whatever. Like, people always talk about how droids are just done bad. But they are, they're a marginalized and discriminated race, because even though they're intelligent computer, you know, artificial intelligence, people just treat them like shit. And then you have the scene with Omega again, humanizing something that isn't human on the Cad Bane ship, where she finds out a way. She's like, hey, I'm not trying to escape. Like, let me fix your leg for you.
Yeah.
Like, why do you let them treat you like that? You know, and you see that a lot in film, but it was like, those were three key points for, like, you know, I guess droid rights, you know, power to the people. But I think with A's, like, that really kind of prepared you for the whole AZ thing. The mutual respect that Omega and AZ had for each other, the genuine and authentic care that she had, and she's like, I don't care if I die, I'm gonna save this droid's life. And I'm glad AZ got to live to, you know, see another day, but I think that was a huge testament to the Bad Batch as well. Because those guys were like, oh God, now we got to go save Omega. But it wasn't like they could have easily had the attitude of like, oh, here we go, damsel in distress again. Like, let's go save Omega's butt again. It was like, look at the care that Omega has for this inanimate object, basically, or animate object that has no feelings, it is a robot and could be made tomorrow with the same programming. Like, how do people view us? Like, we were just a number. We were just soldiers in the clone army, like a dime a dozen, just like, you know, the battle droids or the super battle droids. But then this young woman cares for this thing, and she cares for us. Like, let's show her that let's pay her back, you know? Like, I thought that was amazing.
And then Crosshair is like the one that saves her. Like,
right. Again, irony, dude. It's odd. I mean, the whole show was a testament, I think, in storytelling.
That moment's really crucial too, because Crosshair could have literally ignored the situation, sat there, looked at Hunter and the other guys and said, look, now you have no attachments. Now you're better off, you know,
but it wasn't calculated. He did it. It was a human thing to do. Where, you know, I mentioned, like, Tarkin is evil. Like, those, I think some of those officers are genuinely evil, but Crosshair isn't doing what he's doing because he's a bad guy. He's doing it because he thinks he's doing what he's doing is right. And I don't think that's blind allegiance, but I think Hunter misinterprets it as blind allegiance. So yeah, I mean, the irony in him saving her is, like you said, like, he could just be like, yep, see, there you go, no responsibility, no duty, now join the Empire. But instead he was like, are you guys kidding me? Like, let's save the girl. Like, let's go do something that's bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, it's I can't wait for season 2. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I'll be going into the season two with the same kind of mindset mm-hmm. that I went in with season one, where like I really don't know what to expect still. Mm-hmm.
Will I there did be that with The Mandalorian. I think both seasons. Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because I didn't. I think Mandalorian season one, I think the biggest thing, I mean, obviously besides Grogu, which got a lot of the ladies and you know interested, or not, got a lot of the non-Star Wars fans interested. I called someone basic the other day because they had a Grogu flag. And it's like, I'm not basic. I love Star Wars anyway. I'm like, yeah, but still, I mean, your favorite character
from
The Mandalorian is Grogu. Like, of all the people,
it
like,
clearly
how about,
should be Mando.
Yeah. Or Boba. Or Grand Moff Gideon.
Oh, yeah, right? Dude, exactly.
What's his name? Espinoza. Breaking Bad. Dude, awesome. Especially, especially the conversation he has with Mando at the end with the whole Darksaber. Oh man, dude, he awesome character in season two. But yeah, I went into both seasons of Mandalorian with the same concept in. And I think you should. I mean, it's not only open-mindedness, but like leveling your expectations, which I've tried to do with a lot of phase four of Marvel because it's like I don't know what to expect. Yes. But at the same time, like I don't want to be disappointed, you know. I think Black Widow kind of got a bad rap because it was very anticipated. It was, you know, we waited well over a year for it. So it's kind of like, hello. Whereas I think like with Shang-Chi and Eternals, like I'm going in with an open mind and I think that's just going to be better, you know, cause I did that with, the Snyder cut.
Uh-huh.
I did that with the Suicide Squad and I just came out enjoying it a lot better. And so again, you know, back to Star Wars, I've done that with the shows, the two new shows so far, and it's worked out really well. I did that with Rebels. It worked out really well. I tried to do it with the sequel trilogy and it worked out well for the Rise of Skywalker. I had a really nice, cute post on Facebook about as I lay my bed, you know, my head hits the pillow. I'm just like, thank you, Star Wars. Like, thanks for giving us the ending we deserved. And then as it kind of sunk in and I chewed on it a little more and I was like, oh, this movie is worse than The Last Jedi.
I do kind of have that sentiment a little bit. And it's funny, you know, talking about open-mindedness throughout this episode, you know, over the last few years, I know you and I really did and still do, you know, disagree on The Last Jedi, but I have come to, you know, look at it and I do appreciate it as a movie, but in the grand scheme of Star Wars and the sequel trilogy itself, you know, I do understand. And I look at it as a movie that just doesn't belong, you know? I've said, I think episode 7 and 9 are a great, great movie sequels together. They're a great series, and it's just missing the middle one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that funny enough, Star Wars is also what led me to go into things with an open mind.
Yeah, I think so. Well, imagine have you ever been asked the question like if you could ever go back and see a movie for the first time ever in theaters, like. There's always the follow-up question I always have is like, am I going to see this movie for the first time ever and everyone has the appreciation for it they do now? Like Avengers Endgame and if I could watch that movie again for the first time in a packed theater and it's all just Marvel fans, I'd be like, oh, like give it to me. But if I could go back in time and see any movie and going in, you know, like you said, with an open mind and having the mindset – as much as I want to say a Star Wars, A New Hope, I think if I was a kid back then, if I was a movie fan, like I wouldn't be first in line for Star Wars. Like, you know, being a sports guy, like I would have, that would be a movie. I'd be like, you know, I'm going to wait till everybody else sees. Like I did that with Iron Man because I remember Iron Man and The Dark Knight came out the same year and Batman Begins was already awesome. And like the first Hulk movie was okay. Like X-Men was okay. Like Blade trilogy was good.
Yeah.
That was cool. Punisher movie was okay. Like a lot of these little Marvel one-off things, like with the exception of Spider-Man, which even Spider-Man, the third movie wasn't that good. And it was like, the first Iron Man movie and Doctor Strange, because I was in California and I had to wait to see it with my buddy. Those were the only movies I never saw a midnight premiere because I just was like, I'm going to wait to see what people think, you know? So I'm convinced. I don't know if I would see the first Star Wars movie, you know, back in the 70s. But that being said, I probably would have seen it. And if I could go see Empire Strikes Back for the first time with alongside everybody else seeing it for the first time. I mean, could you imagine?
Especially the twist.
There, oh, right.
Like, imagine I can't imagine.
I am your father. Like the feeling that I had, like the gut feeling that I had when I saw Infinity War for the first time and the way that movie ended. Like, how cool would it be if you like, and there's no end credit scene to kind of take that away. Right. 'Cause like, I think sometimes with the Marvel, I'm glad Endgame didn't have an end credit scene because I got to sit there and chew on the movie.
Yeah.
But like, oh, Luke, I am your father. And then just the way that it ended, you're just like speechless, you know. But it, I think to your point, though, having that open-mindedness, I think Star Wars really does bring a lot of that to me because of the type of film it is or the type of universe and community it continues to develop.
Yeah, I just... Oh man, that twist in theaters. Closest thing. It's funny because we don't live in a world. I feel like we're no one sees Star Wars without knowing that almost.
Yeah. Or anything. Yeah.
Honestly,
go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say the closest thing I've ever had to experience, like someone being in the room as someone experiencing like a twist, so to speak, was Revenge of the Sith was on and me and the fiance, I think I just had it on. I'll just turn them on, you know?
Yeah,
and Anakin ignites the lightsaber when he goes in with the kids or whatever. I think we were watching it. And then
Master Skywalker.
It cuts to like him doing the march. And it had been like a good like 30 seconds since that scene ended. And she just goes, wait, he wasn't going to like kill those kids, right? And I'm just like,
he wasn't going to kill the kids.
Yeah,
he was going to murder them.
He was going to slaughter them. Yes.
Like here we go. You're a Bears fan. It's the 85 Bears versus your high school team.
Yeah, dude, pretty much. Like, it really, yeah.
Got bug-eyed Mike Singletary just teeing off on these high school kids. Yeah.
That's Singletary. There's two.
There's too many of them.
Oh, man. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, for the first time in my entire life, like one of the reasons I buy movies and I love watching movies with people is or rewatching films, because I think a lot of people don't. A lot of people see a movie once and they're like, I'm good. And there's some films like that. Like, I feel that way about Shawshank, for example. I'm sorry. Bring the heat. Yeah. I want it. I rewatched it 2 years ago. It was May 4th, and I was like, ah, man, I haven't watched Star Wars in a while. Like, I want to watch them all. And so, you know, it did Rogue One and Solo and Rise of Skywalker. And it was like, oh, man, like, I was watching it, and I was watching it with someone who never seen them ever before. But like, she lives in a world with pop culture, and she knew, you know, Darth Vader's Luke's father.
Mm-hmm.
But watching it from episode one, and then just watching his character development, and like, you know, obviously I'm spouting out random bits of trivia and Clone Wars this, and then Rebels, and you know, like that scene where Darth Vader shows up and is a badass in Rogue One, and then going into the original trilogy, it's just like, knowing what you know going into that, there were a couple times where like she got emotional because it was like you followed this character the whole time and you see the pain that he went through and you relate to it in any way that you can, and then you go like you feel for the guy, you know. Yeah. Like we're talking about with the Bad Batch, like Darth Vader isn't evil for the sake of being evil. Like he is a tormented person, and he continues to be tormented because of the Emperor's manipulation with whether it's his suit or the Force or whatever. Like all the guy ever wanted was to be a family or to have a family. And he never got that. Even within the own Jedi Order, he never felt truly accepted. And finally, you know, like he finally has a son. He finds out like, oh my God, my kids aren't dead. Like, I don't think Darth Vader knew that he had a daughter.
No,
he never knew Leia was there. And like, that's something that he'll never get. And with Luke, it's like I believe that he genuinely was reaching out saying,
I do too.
Like son, like, come on. Like I'm pleading with you as a father. I'm not pleading with you as the, you know, the Dark Lord of the Sith. And I think, you know, to your point where it's like, that kind of hits you. So in this world of social media, I'm glad the Russo brothers and Marvel and Disney really try to get people not to spoil the movie and, you know, try not to leak anything.
Yes.
Endgame, because I got to experience that Empire Strikes Back feeling. But yeah, I don't think anything will ever beat that. Like anytime anyone asks me that question, it's going to be like, it's going to be Empire Strikes Back hands down. Like the only other movie I could think of, the only other movie I could think of would I would have to say Gone with the Wind. Like watching that for the first time in theaters with everybody else, it would just be like, what a masterpiece, you know? I mean, have you ever seen it, Gone with the Wind?
I have not. I unfortunately, it's on my list. I just
anybody who's who's alive needs to see that movie at least once. Like it's tough. I mean, it's like 4.5 hours, man. It's not like Lord of the Rings is long. Yeah. I have the director's edition. I've seen it a couple times, but like, there's a lot of good action and wit and great writing. And obviously the scenery with Gone with the Wind. I mean, there are some snooze moments, man. But it is a work of art. Like I just love film. I love cinema. Like the, mm-hmm. the canvas that, and even bringing Star Wars into that realm, like, my older sister is a huge book person. Like her and I will argue. She likes movies. So like we love Star Wars mutually. But she will argue to her dying breath that books are better than film. And I understand her point. Like I understand that Nathaniel Hawthorne took an entire chapter to describe the forest in The Scarlet Letter. Cool, mm-hmm. man. Like, good for you. You know, J.R.R. Tolkien did the same thing, but like watching like that scene with Obi-Wan and Anakin on Mustafar, and like I can hear the music right now and I can picture it in my head, and just like the emotion on their faces and like the hatred on Anakin's in his voice, like you're getting every single sense, like except for taste and smell,
yeah,
but like you're still feeling that emotion because of like how the music is portraying mm-hmm. it. You know, I talked about like colors, things like that. Like that's Breaking Bad's one of my favorite. I think one of the greatest shows of all time, because they play on colors, they play on music, they play on dialogue. Like actually, when you hear people talk about art, like painting, like it's not just how good of a drawer or painter you are. It's how do you use the negative space? Like, how do you do that? Like, that's why I will argue that The Office also is one of the greatest shows of all time, because of the nonverbal communication, the nonverbal mm-hmm. jokes that they have. So I think with Star Wars, like, you know, being nostalgic about it, but even, you know, trying to look at it from an academic sense, like it plays so well. I mean, I hate – I see it's so hard to be unbiased. It's so hard to be unbiased. But, like, when you hear that initial dun-dun-dun-dun, like, immediately you're just like, here comes the crawl. Here comes, like, all these emotions just flood your brain and your heart.
Yeah.
And
your stomach. And
because it's like when you hear the Star Wars theme, you're just like – like, one thing that's on my bucket list, and I've never done it, but I know they do it at Fort Wayne often, is I would love to watch – the new, I think it's A New Hope when they do it with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic or any sort of orchestra.
Oh,
like,
yes.
I want to do it with Star amazing. Wars specifically. I mean, I'd do it with any movie like Jurassic Park or any of the Avenger films, but like, yeah, with Star Wars, like with the orchestra there,
it's
like, I don't know.
So different. Oh, yeah. Right?
Have you ever seen a Broadway show like a traveling Broadway show or even like a musical in high school, like anything like that? I saw The Lion King when I was a kid, right? Cartoon, great movie. Cried every time Mufasa dies. Seeing that in real life on a Broadway stage, like whole different type of emotions. So I think seeing Star Wars, like I would get that same emotion, like seeing an actual orchestra there, like feeling the music surround me, like, and especially that the final scene in the throne room, like the dun 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 dun, like the feeling of triumph. You're like, yeah, we beat the Empire, like suck it, nerds. And then like Episode 5 comes out and you're like, fuck. Like the amount of defeat where you're like, oh man, that darn Empire, you still got us, huh?
They shook back.
Yeah, no, I love Star Wars. I'm glad we took a couple minutes here to chat about just all these things. I have all these thoughts and emotions and strong, you know, passionate feelings about it. But I mean, you can't argue. There's facts out there. Like ILM's the perfect example that Star Wars is one of the at least the first film, just with the world building that it has. But I think it's one of the greatest stories of all time because, and greatest films, not only because of what it says, but what it doesn't say. And what it continues to say, and everything else that has come out with it. Like, have you seen that comedian who talks about how J.K. Rowling basically wrote Star Wars, but instead of Jedi, it's wizards?
Have you seen that? Yeah, yeah.
Hilarious. It's good.
It's true. Though. It's so
like,
true.
He draws such good points, but it's just such an inspiration for so many today. And I hope that the, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe does the same thing for, you know, when we're our parents' age, you know, in its entirety. But no, it's great. And I love everything that the Bad Batch is about and the Mandalorian. And I really hope that, or I'm glad that it sounds like Lucasfilm finally has a good grasp. And it's because Dave Filoni's the man, dude. I mean,
he is,
he's what's that line in The Dark Knight? He's the hero that we need, not the one that we deserve.
Yes. He,
you know,
he's the man, and he wears his little cowboy hat.
Yeah. You know? He's the godfather, dude.
I assume he will be in charge one day, right? Like, that's just a given.
How
right?
is he not? Like, the moment The Last Jedi did bad and then return, Rise of Skywalker, they should have been like, hey, Kathleen Kennedy, you know, you're fired. Yeah. Like, you're out, man. Like, Dave Filoni, it's yours.
I'm kind of convinced that she's like the just the face of it now, and yeah. he's just making all the decisions,
which is good. I mean, which that's what fine. Apple did. That's what Apple did with Steve Jobs. Like,
yeah,
he was still the guy, but he wasn't the CEO. I think Barstool Sports does that with Dave Portnoy. Like,
yeah,
he's El Prez, but I mean, there's an actual CEO running the show. So I think that she can do the business side of things, and he can, you know, stick to the creative. I think that's genius. So 100%.
Definitely.
Kevin Feige, I think, is kind of that guy. But now if only the DCEU can get on the train as
dude, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Star Wars now. Like, Star Wars is caught up.
I'm not going to hold my breath for that. But we'll see. So, yeah, this is is just kind of an insight to how me and Fez talk when we get together or at the gym or anything like that. They just,
I know,
those all these tangents.
I wish you could guys see us, man. I mean, it just,
well, next time we do an episode, I'll have to do a YouTube video with it.
Sweet.
It's the whole conversation. I love it. But thanks for coming on, man. Talking a little Bad Batch, talking a little, I guess theory, really movie theory, mm-hmm. Star Wars theory, all that fun stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
We'll definitely have you back on. And, yeah, this was fun. Yeah,
cool. Absolutely, man.
I love it.
I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm a big Patreon subscriber, and even though I think it's $1,
it's $1. Hey, man.
Yeah,
it's the thought that counts.
Yeah, you know, anything I could do to support the pod, but no, I was really pumped about it and everything going forward. So good luck with
that. I appreciate that, man.
Gotta do, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you for coming on. We will definitely have you on again. Thank you all for listening to the show. As always, you can find us on all the social media platforms. Probably YouTube eventually. I know we've had some difficulties with YouTube, but hopefully there eventually. Thank you guys for listening. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
Another happy landing.